Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Tallahassee Regional Airport, offering service through Delta Airlines and Delta Connection partner ExpressJet, with direct flights from Tallahassee to Atlanta connecting to over 315 destinations worldwide. Fares and information available online at delta.com. And from Bryant Miller Olive, a law firm practicing government law, consulting and litigation, and public finance, serving Florida for over 40 years. Bryant Miller Olive, online at bmolaw.com. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
The Florida House and Senate are headed for a showdown after the House approves a controversial expansion of the state's corporate tax scholarship program called vouchers.
It was designed for the truly needy. In this particular case, we are stepping it up to get close to the middle class. And then what's going to come next?
Also tonight, the Florida Senate passes a bill giving local school boards the sole power to choose textbooks.
So you, the school board members, will now have this level of accountability to your constituents whom you asked to vote for you.
We'll also talk about legislative action on guns, tax-free cigarettes, and get the latest on what had been a way to buy new conservation land with money gained from the sale of old conservation land. At the end of week six of the 2014 Florida lawmaking session, I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. The Florida House has moved ahead with its plans to expand the state's corporate tax scholarship program over the objections of the Senate. Lynn Hatter reports the House hopes by tying the expansion to another bill and watering it down, the Senate will be more likely to take the measure up.
Lakeland Republican Senator Kelly Stargell has already said she has no interest in allowing an expansion of the state's voucher program to be tied to her bill creating financial accounts for students with severe disabilities. But in the House, both issues are tied together in one proposal, which was approved by the chamber Friday in a mostly party line vote.
Clerk will lock the machine and announce the vote.
73 yeas, 43 nays, Mr. Speaker.
Show the bill passes.
The House bill increases the dollar amount of scholarships given to students so they can go to private schools and says families may now earn as much as $57,000 and still qualify for them. It's a stripped-down version of the original plan that would have steered some state sales tax revenue into Florida's corporate tax scholarship program. But even in its scaled-back form, it's still a target of Democratic opposition. Boca Raton Representative Irv Schlossberg accused the program of literally robbing public schools.
If parents want to send their children to for-profit private schools, they already have the option. So why should we all have to pay for it? On behalf of the Florida taxpayers, I have to say, go pick someone else's pocket.
The expansion language proved problematic for many Democrats, even those who have come to support the corporate tax scholarship program in recent years. The Senate wanted to mandate scholarship students take the same state exams as those in public schools do. But opposition to that led the Senate sponsor to withdraw that chamber's version of the bill, harming its chances of passing the legislature. But private schools are not governed by the same rules as public schools, even if some do receive what would have otherwise been public dollars. The Senate is still holding firm on its testing requirement, and Fort Walton Beach Republican Representative Matt Gaetz, son of Senate President Don Gaetz, voted in favor of the bill. However, the younger Gaetz took the opportunity to blast his fellow Republican lawmakers who continue to reject the Senate's call to give private school scholarship students the same tests as those in public school.
I see teachers who are public school teachers who believe in school choice, and they say to me, Matt, I want to compete against charter schools and private schools. But when you measure me against the teachers in those schools, can we at least use the same ruler for measurement? I think it's a fair ask.
While most of the debate centered on the corporate tax scholarship language, Kissimmee Democratic Representative Ricardo Rangel turned his attention to the provision creating a new funding mechanism for some of the most severely disabled students in the state. It sets up individual accounts for those students to help them fund additional services or even pay for private school tuition. Rangel, whose son has special needs, says he believes the additional funding source is good for families.
If my child's in public school, but he's not getting the right therapies that he needs, be it speech therapy, occupational therapy, or physical therapy, I can take advantage of this program to go get those therapies somewhere else. That is an opportunity for a parent to be sure that their child is getting what they need. And frankly, that's what we should be doing.
The House's approval of the bill sets up a showdown with the Senate. If the Senate does not amend its version of the disabilities bill to add in the scholarship language, or the two sides can't reach an agreement, both issues could go down to defeat. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
The Florida Senate narrowly passed a bill today giving school districts sole control over selecting textbooks and curricula and taking that power away from the state education department. As Jessica Palumbo reports, the local control option has been available to school districts since last year, but none of them has chosen it so far.
The Senate passed the local control bill on a 21-19 vote, with five Republicans siding with Democrats in voting no. Umatilla Republican Senator Alan Hayes says his bill is for parents.
Over and over and over again, I have been approached by parents in my district and from those outside my district saying we are very, very concerned about the content of the instructional materials that is being used to teach our students.
In a recent interview with Florida Public Radio, Hayes said some parents have complained to him about math teaching methods, including one assignment Hayes saw for himself.
You draw a square and you cut it into sections and you divide them diagonally and then you write the numbers of the problem around the square and everything. It's just a bizarre thing. It's a whole lot easier if you can teach a young person to memorize their multiplication tables and then bingo, bingo, they can get the thing solved.
But Hayes says by far the most common complaint he's heard is about literature parents perceive to be inappropriate. And that's exactly why some lawmakers fear the bill, which puts parents on instructional review committees. Orlando Democratic Senator Geraldine Thompson says the measure opens the door to censorship.
We may have school boards that object to the work of Mark Twain or object to any kind of emphasis on different beliefs, different lifestyles. And so I think that it's dangerous.
And several lawmakers speaking out against the proposal say it does something that's already possible under current law.
This is not really a sensible bill because we already have this law in place and school boards have not taken advantage of it.
That's Hollywood Democratic Senator Eleanor Sobel. Since last year, Florida law has allowed school boards to choose a local textbook adoption program that would preempt the state-level process. Not one has embraced that option. But Orange Park Republican Senator Rob Bradley says school boards should take responsibility for what's taught in their districts.
If school boards don't have control over their curriculum and textbooks, really, what do they do? That's kind of their fundamental job. I mean, other than negotiating a union contract and figuring out who picks up your kid on a bus.
But some Democrats say school boards don't currently have textbook selection in their budgets. Miami Democratic Senator Gwen Margolis says the current process is much more efficient. A state panel of experts gives districts several textbook options for every subject.
They have a contract. They buy it cheaper. It's easier. Somebody else has gone through a dozen books.
Others call the bill an unfunded mandate that could cost school districts hundreds of thousands of dollars. But Hayes says they'll at least get some money from book publishers.
Current state law authorizes each school board to assess a fee of $3,500 for every book that is reviewed. Now, that will pay the expense.
The House version of the bill, sponsored by Fort Walton Beach Republican Representative Matt Gaetz, has reached the floor of that chamber as well. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jessica Palumbo.
Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi today praised the House of Representatives for passing the Controlled Substances Bill. This legislative proposal would add six additional substances to Schedule 1 of controlled substances. It'd make it a third-degree felony for an individual to sell, manufacture, or deliver, or possess with intent to sell, manufacture, or deliver these dangerous drugs. Additionally, the bill adds three extremely lethal synthetic compounds, which are commonly found in the street, including the drug commonly known as Molly, to the trafficking statute. It's sponsored by Representative Clay Ingram. The Senate companion bill is sponsored by Senator Rob Bradley. But at the same time today, the legislature passed a bill ramping down the sentences for possession of small amounts of prescription painkillers. Under current law, a person who is in mere possession of seven hydrocodone pills without a prescription faces a three-year mandatory minimum sentence in state prison. The bill as passed revises the mandatory minimum sentences so that low-level, nonviolent offenders may be diverted to drug courts and substance abuse treatment. Still to come on Capitol Report, with just 3 weeks to go in this year's Florida legislative session, some Florida lawmakers are working to make sure a measure tweaking a controversial gun law still gets heard.
And I'm here with House members, Senate members, to call upon the legislature in the last 2 weeks to get a conscience and amend Stand Your Ground.
Some experts worry a plan to allow the sale of some tax-free cigarettes could lead to a spike in smoking.
Higher cigarette prices and higher cigarette taxes reduce youth smoking comprehensively.
And a bit of journalistic sunshine helps put the kibosh on a plan to buy new protected land with money obtained from the sale of old protected land.
We knew from the very moment they began the process that it was going to be unsuccessful.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, helping donors make a difference through planned giving, putting donations to work so people with disabilities can too, on the web at abletrust.org. The Able Trust, empowerment, education, employment.
The bipartisan bill to tweak Florida's Stand Your Ground law appears stalled in the Florida Senate, and as Sasha Cordner reports, several groups, including the so-called Dream Defenders, joined the measure's author in calling for further discussion to changing the controversial law.
Senate Democratic leader Chris Smith has been working side by side with Altamont Springs Republican Senator David Simmons in trying to make changes to Florida's Stand Your Ground law. Smith says the legislation is needed to address some of the recent decisions associated with the law.
One jury sent a message that you can track down kids, kill them, and walk free. Another jury sent a message that you can shoot into a van of kids and still not get convicted of murder. And as we see, even recently, more and more people are availing themselves of provisions of Stand Your Ground that should not be availing themselves of that.
Both Simmons and Smith filed separate bills last year, which never got called up for a hearing. This year, though, they decided to work together, and the measure has passed two of its four committees. A few weeks ago, it passed its second committee, the Senate Judiciary Committee, but Smith says it was later referred back to that same panel.
And that's usually done with the consultation with the president. So that's mild resistance. But I think the president has 2 weeks to go to do the right thing and get the bill to the floor.
It's Alpha Day at the Capitol, and members of the Alpha Phi Alpha fraternity stood with Smith to speak in favor of getting the measure heard. That includes the frat's Florida District Director, Matthew Bradford, who quoted a well-known member of the Black Collegiate Fraternity.
Dr. Martin Luther King stated that our lives begin to end the day we become silent upon things that matter. We as an organization cannot be silent when things like Stand Your Ground exist. Although we support the efforts of Brother Senator Chris Smith as far as Bill 130, we are supporting an end to Stand Your Ground. It needs to be done away with. No other family should have to deal with what the Trayvon Martin family and the Jordan Davis family had to endure as far as losing a child. We have to end Stand Your Ground.
And the group calling themselves the Dream Defenders weighed in on the issue, too. They're the group that spent about a month in the Capitol building last summer in protest of the George Zimmerman acquittal. Zimmerman fatally shot unarmed teen Trayvon Martin, calling attention to Florida's Stand Your Ground law. Dream Defender Executive Director Philip Agnew, who's also a member of Alpha Phi Alpha, also spoke.
Something must be done for young black men in this state. Something must be done for young black families in this state. Something must be done on behalf of the poor in this state. And I'm proud to stand behind, alongside, and in this moment in front of men who are ready to act on behalf of those values.
Chair of the Legislative Black Caucus and Tallahassee Democratic Representative Alan Williams also spoke at Friday's press conference. He tried to repeal Florida Stand Your Ground law last year, but it failed at its first hearing in a bipartisan vote against his bill. Still, he says it's worth it to try to change the law as well. And he says Governor Rick Scott needs to use his office to put weight behind the bill.
These men who are fathers, who are brothers, who are uncles, grandfathers, who are community leaders, are calling on the legislature to provide leadership. We're calling on Governor Rick Scott to provide leadership. We want him to use his pulpit, his bully pulpit, to tell the legislature, send me a bill that repairs Stand Your Ground. And if he doesn't, then the voters of Florida should stand their ground.
The measure contains several suggestions that came from the governor's task force, as well as another that Smith called for as well, following the death of Trayvon Martin. It includes further defining what an aggressor is, putting guidelines in place for neighborhood watch programs, and allowing innocent bystanders or their families to sue if that person gets caught in the crossfire of someone defending themselves. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Stay tuned next week when we hear from the main author of Stand Your Ground and his thoughts on the matter. Peanut butter, sardines, and cabbage may be healthy options for some scrupulous dieters, but Florida prison inmates whose kosher meals are comprised primarily of those three staples served cold 7 days a week say the chow isn't just nutritionally inadequate, it's just plain gross. They contend that the peanut butter, sardines, and cabbage served up daily by the Florida Department of Corrections are designed to discourage inmates from signing up for the kosher meals or to punish inmates if they do. Critics say that the chow was far from what a federal judge had in mind last year when she ordered the state to start serving kosher meals to inmates. Agency officials insist the revised kosher meal option, which until last month included items such as meatloaf, Salisbury steak, and turkey cutlets, is a way for the cash-strapped prison system to cut costs while complying with the court order. Florida lawmakers are talking over a measure that would allow certain groups to sell cigarettes to the general public without charging a sales tax. As Regan McCarthy reports, they're not just blowing smoke.
For years, Seminole Tribe members have been able to purchase cigarettes on their reservations without paying sales tax.
The Seminoles were given coupons, which represented the reimbursement of taxes paid by the tribe when they purchased tax-paid cigarettes for tax-free sale to tribal members.
That's Dave Merzen, a legislative assistant for Baker Republican Senator Greg Evers. Evers is sponsoring a bill that would let anyone purchase cigarettes tax-free if they're on a reservation, regardless of their heritage.
The proposed bill mandates all revenue from the sale of tax-exempt cigarettes must be deposited in a special fund reserved exclusively for Indian health care.
The bill also requires the tribe to develop a tobacco prevention and use education program and creates two new seats on the Florida Advisory Council on Statewide Tobacco Prevention Use, one of which must be filled by a Tribal Program Advisory Council member. And while it might be hard to argue that those programs are bad, Peter Fisher, the vice president of state issues at the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids, says he has serious concerns with a plan to reduce or especially get rid of the sales tax on cigarettes.
Oh, I think it would be an incredibly dangerous move.
Fisher says studies show increasing the price of cigarettes or upping the sales tax charged for cigarettes reduces the number of people who smoke. And he says that's especially true for youth, who tend to have less money.
The estimates are that for every 10% that the price of a pack of cigarettes increases, you get about a 4% reduction in overall smoking. And that is composed of about a 7% reduction in youth smoking and a 2% reduction in adult smoking.
And Fisher says a few recent cases have proven anecdotally the opposite is true, too. In other words, reducing the cost leads to an increase in smoking.
When what we refer to as Marlboro Friday took place, when Philip Morris dramatically cut prices on Marlboro and its other brands, the other companies followed suit, and youth smoking rates really took off.
He also says a case in Canada in which the government reduced the taxes for cigarettes led to a jump in youth smoking. But Merzen says Evers' bill isn't a free-for-all. There are some limiting factors. For example, a finite number of tax-free cigarettes could be sold.
The number of coupons provided each year is calculated by multiplying the number of members of the tribe, including every man, woman, and child, approximately 3,400, times 5 packs of cigarettes for each member, times 365 days a year. This formula results in the equivalent of over 6 million packages of cigarettes.
Merzen says the process will be different. Although the smokes could be sold to anyone, the number available for sale with no tax won't change. The measure also makes it a crime if anyone purchases more than 3 tax-free cartons of cigarettes in a week and limits the sales to tribal smoke shops. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
A bill that would help teens in foster care get better access to a driver's license is poised for passage during this legislative session. The measure by State Senator Nancy Dietert and Representative Ben Albritton is aimed at keeping foster kids from falling behind their peers. Not many of the teens learn to drive because they don't have access to the family car or high school driver's ed classes, much less parents willing to add them to the family auto insurance policy. The bill would establish a 3-year pilot program to pay for driver's education, a license, and auto insurance for qualified foster kids. The House has passed the bill out of all 3 committees, but without funding for the insurance. Dietert, however, says Senate President Don Gates has agreed to have his chamber pay for the entire $800,000 item that would cover the cost for foster parents to add foster kids to their motor vehicle coverage. You're listening to Capital Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, you've seen all those movies that portray news reporting as dashing, sometimes dangerous work with a generous dollop of romance thrown in, right? And very often the drama involves investigative reporting that uncovers corruption or something similar that leads to truly positive social change. Well, the fact is that it's very seldom that journalists see their work affect much of anything, including the outcome of a story. But that very situation happened recently to Florida Public Radio's Stan Jastrzebski. A couple of weeks ago, Stan got a call from a source he'd used back in November and then pretty much forgotten about. And now, as the late Paul Harvey used to say, you'll hear
the rest of the story.
When my colleagues told me George Lindsay was on the phone, the name rang only a vague bell. He introduced himself as a Polk County commissioner. I immediately remembered the story. We'd been looking into a proposed sale of state conservation land. Florida Public Radio's Jessica Palumbo had laid some groundwork, and now I was tying up loose ends.
Well, as you recall, you made a kind of a blind call to the Board of County Commissions office, and I just happened to be the only commissioner in the office at the time and was willing to take the call and, you know, figure out what was going on.
What was going on was that just a few weeks after the state announced the land sale program, counties objected to the sale of more than half the parcels on the list. And I had determined Polk County held the majority of what was left, so I called the county. As I said, 3/4 of the remaining acreage on the list are in Polk County. How does that strike you?
Well, it certainly takes me by surprise to learn that 3/4 of the properties are in Polk County.
That was November 19th. When he called me a couple weeks ago, Lindsay told me what happened next. He was true to his word and had asked his staff to look into the circumstances of the sale. Eventually, the county commissioners voted to ask the governor's office to remove the Polk County land from the sale list, which officials did. By February, the whole program was defunct. When I spoke to him again this week, I asked Lindsay his reaction.
It was initiated and prompted by your call, and turned out pretty good.
In truth, he gave credit where it wasn't altogether due. Most counties had objected to their inclusion, and that's what killed the program. Florida Public Radio tried to get Department of Environmental Protection officials to agree to a taped interview, but a spokeswoman said no one was available and instead sent along wording from the February DEP press release announcing the demise of their initiative. But the issue of funding for conservation efforts is still alive in this year's budget. Differing proposals from the House and Senate offer between $40 and $70 million, but there's still the question of where ongoing funding will come from to buy conservation land.
The flaw in the logic to me is to rely on the sale of surplus lands as the primary means of funding.
Janet Bowman is legislative director for the Florida chapter of the Nature Conservancy.
But I think this exercise has shown that the state is buying land that is achieving, you know, these targeted conservation purposes. And, you know, it's really more the exception than the rule that, you know, there's land that isn't needed to fulfill those purposes.
Audubon Florida Executive Director Eric Draper says he hopes lawmakers remember the failed land sale effort as they consider how much the state should spend on conservation.
Sometimes you have to let a bad idea completely play itself out. You could stand there and tell people, hey, that's a bad idea, that's not going to work. They don't believe you. Well, now the bad idea has been put to the test. It doesn't work. And the next time a legislator comes up and says, let's sell some more parks and forests, then we can say, hey, you tried that. It didn't work.
1,000 Friends of Florida President Charles Pattison says he's amenable to selling state land in order to purchase more for conservation. But he wants to target a different kind of land.
Do we have buildings around the state that aren't, you know, being utilized or that have excess acreage associated with them that could be sold for, you know, good conservation purposes? I think that's a real consideration that ought to be added, you know, if this program starts up again.
The state has not announced a reboot of the land selling program, but environmentalists say they would like to see holes in the current state map filled in. A couple of ways they suggest the state could do that would be purchasing land to make conservation areas contiguous or focusing on protecting the habitat of endangered creatures. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Stan Jastrzebski.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Ronald J. Eben, Lynn Hatter, Stan Jastrzebski, Regan McCarthy, and Jessica Palumbo. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And join us again each weeknight during the 2014 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care, on the web at searcylaw.com. Tallahassee Regional Airport, offering service through Delta Airlines and Delta Connection partner ExpressJet, with direct flights from Tallahassee to Atlanta connecting to over 315 destinations worldwide. Fares and information available online at delta.com. And from Bryant Miller Olive, a law firm practicing government law, consulting and litigation, and public finance, serving Florida for over 40 years. Bryant Miller Olive, online at bmolaw.com. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.